Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi, it's Lois. Looking for some children's books that introduce the topic of disability and inclusion. Stay tuned after the episode. Grateful thanks to our sponsors, Hindenburg Pro, for the use of the license for our editing software. Hindenburg.com. It's all about the story. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a show where we discuss all matters disability. I'm your host, Lois Drachen, and today we are joined, it's my honor to be joined by Dr. Chigi Okutwana, all the way from Nigeria. Dr. Chigi, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It is wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Louie. It's indeed an honor for me to be on your podcast. I'm sure we're going to have a very brilliant conversation.
I'm sure we will. I have been following your work for some time since we first met at a conference, and I'm really fascinated to dive a little deeper into the work that you do, and particularly the work you do around seizure conditions and children who are marginalized or living with disabilities in your home country of Nigeria. So I do have a little bit of background about you and your work and your life, but at this stage, perhaps my audience does not. So can we start by perhaps asking you to introduce yourself and tell us a little of your story?
Absolutely, Louie. So my name, like you rightly pronounced, is Dr. Chigi Okutwana. I'm from Nigeria. I'm from the eastern part of Nigeria. I am a mother of three. I'm a health practitioner, a health journalist. I'm also the executive director of a non-governmental organization called Seizure Support Foundation. So what we do basically is to bring health, education and social solutions to children who are marginalized children, for example, who have neurodevelopmental issues and other kinds of special needs. So in a nutshell, that is who I am and that is what I do.
Wonderful. Thank you. So the Seizure Support Foundation, tell us about what the SSF is and the work that you do there in a little more detail. Would love to learn more.
Absolutely. So SSF is actually an acronym for Seizure Support Foundation. So it's a non-governmental organization, a non-profit organization in Nigeria. So I'm going to just give you a little bit of a background story as to what led to the formation of the organization. Like I said in my introduction, I am a mother, and in 2013, I had my son, and he was diagnosed with infantile spasms, and it was new to me. I didn't know how to handle him because he had neurodevelopmental challenges. He wasn't meeting his milestones. You know, at 2 years, he wasn't walking, you know, he wasn't talking, he wasn't just meeting his milestones and doing what children his age, you know, what they were supposed to do. So to me, and I am a single mother, so to me, it was so much of a burden emotionally, financially, and otherwise. And as he grew, I started seeing the difference in the way society accepts children like him and other children. For example, I had such a challenge trying to put him in school because the school system here in Nigeria is so, for lack of a better word, is straitjacketed in its approach, and they're not inclusive as to, you know, accommodate children who do not learn as fast as, you know, in quotes, those who are normal, who don't have issues. So I found myself pulling him from, you know, mainstream schools because you pay so much and you don't see any impact. There are no assistive technologies. You know, they don't even understand individualized educational plans. You know, these are the things I got to know from my work and from researching on children with special needs. So it was a challenge for me in terms of education and also of health. You have to pay from out of pocket. The National Health Scheme does not accommodate children with special needs. So you find out that we have limited range of drugs, you know, anti-seizure drugs that are so expensive, you have to pay from out of pocket. And depending on the severity of your child's you know, issue, you have to go see the doctor at least once a week, twice a week, just depending. And it's really stressful. I've mentioned the educational aspect of the health and the financial aspect, and then the emotional burden. It was so much of a burden to carry being a special parent, and you have to, you know, take care of your child's educational and health needs all by yourself. And at a point, I actually reached out and I started asking for groups, support groups that I can join, so that if you meet one or two parents who have actually had this experience, they can actually help you when it gets so, you know, when the burden is so much, you need someone to talk to. And I couldn't find any support system. I reached out to friends, nobody, even online, on site. Nobody was willing to come forward to say, oh, I have a special child and this is how, you know, we go through our challenges. So a friend of mine, God rest his soul, he's late now, medical doctor, said to me, Chigi, I think Providence, God is calling you to start something, because if you're going through one thing, it's very possible that there are so many parents that are going through it. So that was 2016. And I started just a little something support group where parents could, you know, talk about their challenges. But I can tell you for a fact that that support group really didn't take off. And I guess we're going to come to the reason why it didn't really take off. And I sat back and I said, what else can I do to support, you know, children, families with children with special needs? And we came up with our flagship program, which has been on since 2021. So that was how Seizure Support Foundation started. After our sports group thingy didn't work out, we started with awareness. So because I had a lot of friends in the medical field, so I could talk to them, doc, could we talk about something around seizures, you know, how to take care of kids with seizures, epilepsy, you know, neurodevelopmental challenges, especially just vulnerable children. Generally, we continued with that after 2021 when we started our flagship program, which is our special education scholarships. Okay, so for now, this is how SSF started, and we're still growing and going strong. Thank you.
You know, if one considers the World Health Organization statistics that say that globally, the number of people living with disabilities is approximately 18%. I'm trying to think whether the right word is sad or difficult or complicated or just curious to understand that when you started searching for resources, support groups within your own country, that you weren't able to access them. Why do you think that is? Is it something cultural, historical? I mean, what is the reason, do you think, in Nigeria that there are so few resources that have been available?
Okay, so before we go into resources, which you are correct, in 2020, if I am correct, we did some sort of analysis, some root cause analysis to find out why there is very, very little response, not just from government, but other stakeholders, even parents, sadly. And we found out that aside from poverty, the main reason that is actually more cultural, stigmatization. Nobody wants to be known as that mother or that father whose child has special needs, because they feel it's either God's punishment or it's an innate family curse or it's a jinx or things around that. So they would rather hide the children away. Let me tell you this. Currently, at least you have some statistic about, global statistic about children with disabilities, but we have none locally, nationally. Well, what you can get at best is estimates. We have tried to lead advocacy visits to see how we can meet relevant ministries so we can have an idea, the numbers of kids with special needs, so that we can plan for schools, so we can plan for health institutions, so we can plan towards national health schemes. We don't have such. And there is no political will. And the reason why there's no political will is that there's no pressure coming from parents. A single person cannot lead an advocacy. So it stems down to stigmatization. So until we lead proper awareness to tell parents or to convince parents with children who have special needs, if you don't mount pressure on government, they will not think that you have an issue. Mm. Parents of children who are, in quotes, normal, they advocate for their children in schools, health. But those of us with kids with special needs, we rather hide them away because we don't want to be identified as parents with children that have medical issues. So aside the fact that funds are not, I'm one person, it's my personal philosophy that I believe that money is everything, that you need funds. I think there are basic ground rules that should be put in place before we even start talking about funding. And one of these is our mindset, our behavior towards certain things. So in some of the conversations I've had, I've told them about a friend of mine actually introduced me to a film called Pre-Cam. It was how the disability movement started in America. And yes, it started with young people, with teenagers in a camp. I mean, and they came back to town and they took over and they gave birth to the Disability Act that, Americans are enjoying. So if they had not put themselves out there, the government probably wouldn't think it was an important issue to tackle. At a point, they even occupied, spaces, government spaces. So we really have to mount that pressure, and we're not even close. We're nowhere close to that in terms of advocacy for, our kids with special needs. So these are the issues, stigmatization. Parents don't want to come out. Imagine if there were parents like me, if we're up to 10 in my local areas, we would have gone to the government house to meet with the governor, would have gone to meet our congressmen, we would have gone to say, at least if it's just to provide funds so that we can have the numbers of the kids, to be able to say, okay, this percentage, these numbers are children who are out of school because they cannot fit into the normal school system. The government will say, what can we do? Should we build them a school? Should we make the schools inclusive? So these are the things, the challenges that we are having, even before we start talking about resources and funds being made available.
I think you're so correct. The power of unity and collective action is so important when one is talking about gaining acknowledgement and recognition. And without that acknowledgement, it's very hard to justify looking while trying to advocate for funding, because it's easier to reject a funding request for a single person at a government level than it is to reject a funding request when you do correctly assess the size of the community that you are working with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a significant challenge. And I can imagine that in terms of the advocacy that you are doing, you must be working on a number of different fronts with a number of different stakeholders. Do you want to tell us a little bit about who are the types of people that you're reaching out to shift this mindset and make change?
Thank you so much, Louie. Now, we're looking at a bottom-up approach and a top, you know, bottom approach. So we're looking at stakeholders across boards. Like I mentioned earlier, we wanted to start with advocacy, but we met a roadblock. So we started with awareness. So I am working currently with the government. We have a lot of courtesy visits to relevant government ministries like Women Affairs, Social Affairs, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education. I can tell you for sure that something tangible has come out, but it's really important that you let the government know, hey, we are here and this is what we are doing. Just in case you want to work with us, we are available to work, even down to the grassroots. So yeah, we're working with the government. And then we're working with young people. We want to see how we can take the message to the young people. For example, we have an initiative, we call it the Free Seizure First Aid and CPR Training. It's for young people in the universities. So that is our awareness tool. As we teach them CPR and how to administer first aid to someone going through a seizure or someone who is epileptic, we're also telling them, hey, these are normal human beings. These are people with emotions so that they can better interact, right? They can better, that's the word, interact with them and understand that these are people who have futures and people who have plans and vision and people who are likely to be employed or employable in the future, just to close that gap. Because there's a lot of social gaps. We're closing the health gaps, we're closing the social gaps just by this one, you know, initiative. So these two basically is what I can think about in terms of the stakeholders we are working with. We're working with state governments, we are working with individuals. And we once had an initiative, but it currently is being kept in view because of funding issues, where we organize teacher training for teachers because we noticed that schools here are not inclusive in any way to meet, you know, the global standards of how to educate children with special needs. They don't even understand things like dyslexia, learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. And in trying to teach these children, they even, you know, create more harm. So we tried to organize, we did it once, a teacher training for schools, private schools, so that when they encounter a child or two who do not learn as fast as others, they will understand how to handle that child. So basically, these are the people we are open to working with in terms of our stakeholders of what we are pushing our agenda. And we're hopeful that as resources are available, which we know they will be available in due course, we can reach out to more people, especially the parents. We are looking for a forum where we can get parents together under one umbrella and have a good conversation. So it's in the pipeline.
We wish you success with those initiatives because they are so crucially important. Looking beyond the specific groups that you are working with in the Seizure Support Foundation, are you seeing similar challenges, looking more generally at the inclusion of persons with disabilities in Nigeria? So blindness, mobility impairments, hearing impairments, deafness, that type of thing. Do you have much understanding or knowledge of that side?
Well, not exactly, but I am not totally oblivious of that group, right? Actually, we had this stakeholder meeting where we we kind of expanded our scope in terms of persons with vulnerability who we can actually reach. Yes, but as it stands now, it's in terms of inclusion, it's really very low in Nigeria. Not that there aren't pockets of advocacy or work going on, but it is really very low. Take education, for example, where my place of residence, my local community, we don't have a single government inclusive school. Now we are working on advocacy visits. And to be clear, it is not as easy, you know, going for advocacy visits, especially here.
Mm.
You have to write, you have to wait, you know, and then prepare and go and visit. It looks like you put in the request and it happens the next day. So in my locality, Enugu State, the government, the governor is doing so well. We have 17 local government areas or municipalities in your area. So he's building what he calls smart schools. I'm taking education, for example.
Yeah.
So he's building 260 smart schools, leveraging on the infrastructure, the public schools that are available in the state currently. He wants to upgrade every one of them. Now we're saying it's a beautiful idea, it's a great initiative in education. However, what is the plan for inclusive education?
Mm.
It still falls back to what I am telling you, that parents aren't doing enough. We don't have the numbers to go to the government to say, hey, we have this percentage of children who are being excluded from your smart school.
Yeah.
So we are putting the letter and we're waiting to be called so that we can go and say, okay, governor, 260 smart schools, how can we make it friendly to kids with special needs, to the blind, to people who cannot walk, who are visually impaired, people with delayed mouth, the neurodevelopmental challenges.
Mm.
What about the teachers? Do we have teachers to accommodate them? What about assistive technology? And we're going to get to video modeling very soon from the work we did earlier. So we want to meet with him and say, even if it's just a fraction of the 260 schools, because we have special needs, children with special needs across the state. We're not just advocating for just one school. We need several in different local governments to, you know, cater to the educational needs of these children.
And moving then from beyond the education sector into other sectors, where do you see that then developing?
Okay. Like I told you earlier, inclusion for persons with disability in Nigeria is quite low. The gap is quite huge. But some of the things that we are doing to ensure that this gap is, you know, reduced, in education, I've already mentioned our advocacy to the governor, the government of Enugu State, my locality, to see how we can leverage infrastructure and resources in the 260 smart schools to become more inclusive so that kids with special needs can actually get quality education. So when we go over to the health, it has come up during the course of our conversation that the National Health Insurance Scheme does not cover medication and medical treatments for children with special needs. Families always have to pay from out of pocket, and it's a problem.
Of course.
So this is what the Joseph Foundation is doing. We have another initiative called, I've forgotten, it's a long acronym, but it's a medical outreach where we go and we treat persons with vulnerability. Like I told you the last time, we've expanded to include more persons who are vulnerable. So quite recently, I'm going to tell you the story, we found out that there's a place in my area, not so far from the metropolis, where a home housing over 70 children with special needs. autistics, cerebral palsy patients, epileptic patients, you name them, muscle atrophy. Over 70, we found out that home somewhere in the outskirts, and we visited the home. And we tried to find out what the challenges are for the lady, a particular woman called Louisa. She has been taking care of these children. And what happens is that sometimes either the children are dumped on her doorsteps or people bring them and then they keep paying a certain amount for the upkeep of the kids and things like that. And we found out that health was a major issue.
Of course.
Because she doesn't have a job. Or of course, the kids are a handful, 70-something, you know, children in a home. So I tried to reach out to our governor again to see how we can develop, if possible. I'm not a finance or insurance expert, but to see how we can bring in experts to include this home or give them some sort of state-based insurance scheme so that each time a child falls sick or has an episode, she can easily jump into the car with the child and go to a particular designated hospital and get treatment without having to pay. But that is not in place now. So what are we doing as an organization? So at Teachers for Foundation, we go on medical outreaches to these places. We have one actually scheduled by November to that particular place. We are going with nurses, we're going with doctors, we're going with physiotherapists, and we're still working to see if we can get eye doctors to join us. So that is the much we can do. We go there, we treat them, consult them, treat them, give them drugs, and then check in on them every now and then. But these are just, you know, I don't know how to put it, but what are they among so many? What about the kids that are not living in the home? I mean, who takes care of their health, especially from parents who are not so rich, who are not so well-to-do? So we still have a lot of work to do. We still have a lot of advocacy. But the problem is with the stigmatization, parents don't want to come out. They don't want to talk about this. If we're able to say that we have so and so number of children living with disabilities in the community, therefore they should have their own hospital, they should have their own health insurance scheme, then we have something evidence-based to, you know, advocate about. So these are the issues. The inclusion of persons with disabilities in Nigeria is still so very low because the advocacy is weak. It's not evidence-based. So that is the problem we have. That's the challenge we're having.
Well, with parents being afraid to acknowledge their children living with special needs, who we need to remember grow into teenagers and adults and then mature people also living with those same special needs.
Yes.
It is very hard to advocate because it's easier for the state departments to dismiss it as an individualized case.
Yes.
So, gosh, sounds like a really, really difficult challenge that you are facing, and full respect to you and the people that you're working with for the work that you're doing. But if I may, I'd want to mention something that find out a little bit more about something that you've referred to before, and that is the Special Education Scholarship Project. It's taking us back a bit into the education side. But can you tell us a little bit about the scholarship project? Because I'd love to find out a little bit more.
All right. So I told you initially when I wanted to place my son in a school, it was a challenge. Well, up until I met someone who introduced me to a school, a therapeutic daycare center in my area. Well, very far from where I live, but then accessible, and I did go there, and they were the only school that tried to place my son accordingly, you know, taking through an assessment, you know. So I got very close to some of the kids, got very close to the teachers. And I think within the course of 1 year, I noticed that some kids that I was close to weren't coming to school anymore. So I reached out to the admin and I said, why are these kids not in school? And she said, oh, the parents said they can't take care of their school fees, their tuition. They have five more other kids, six more other kids, four other kids. And they would rather, you know, in air quotes, take care of the good ones, the normal ones, than, you know, pay, you know, extra money to care for these other ones who have issues. And I'm like, can I meet with the parents? Can I call the parents? I reached out to the parents and said the same thing. And I said, okay, can I get back to you? So I came back, I spoke with my people, I said, maybe we should start something around this area. I mean, the best you can do, or the least you can do rather, is to keep these kids in school, pending when we have something concrete to offer them. So it was unanimous, and we put, you know, little resources together, and we were able to, we started with just three. Like today, they are up to 15. You know, so we pay for their school fees and we pay termly because we are not buoyant enough to pay yearly or in the first semester. So each term, the parents, they come, they collect their check. And as we do that, other people see what we do and see how consistent that we have become. And they want to adopt a child and pay for the child's school fees. So, yeah, we're not there yet, but we've made progress considerably. So, well, we even have a student, an autistic patient from Port Harcourt. It's a neighboring town to where I live, and we are, by the grace of God, paying his school fees, and we've been doing that since 2021. So that is that's about it with our special education scholarship scheme.
It's something that you are able to do that is giving an opportunity to the children and to their parents that they wouldn't otherwise have. So well done. That's fantastic. And good luck continuing to take that further. And later on, I'm going to invite you to share in any of your contact details. So if people listening to this are able to reach out support in the form of financial support to help with that program, that they can have the opportunity to do so.
That's great.
Something else that you've mentioned during our conversation is the video, the individualized video modeling program for scholars.
Yeah.
And I'd love to learn more about that.
Okay. So that was 2022. I was in a seminar, in a webinar organized by Dr. Chichi on Instagram. And she invited Gemini. Gemini is an American company that they have this educational solution for autistic children to help them with communication. So I was in that webinar. So when the webinar was over, I reached out to the facilitator. I wrote to her and I said, okay, this is who I am. This is what we do. Can we access your tool for this number of weeks so that we can see how it works with African kids? I'm not sure you have used it on, you know, kids who are not from America, from outside, you know, different cultures. And they said, yes, absolutely, they would. So for 5 weeks, we had access to Gemini Educational 2. So what we did was the school, the therapeutic daycare center I told you about. So I spoke with the management and they gave me 5 weeks, 4 days a week, 1 hour each day to administer this tool to the students. So we picked randomly. We didn't have much resources, so we couldn't have much students. I think we had only 7 students, but we picked across severe, mild, and moderate, you know, disability. But they were strictly developmental. So what we found out at the end of 5 weeks was that video modeling actually helps children to improve on their communication, on social interaction. In fact, there was one particular child, an autistic young girl. She learned how to say please, thank you, excuse me. She learned how to raise her hands in class if she wants to ask a question. And generally, we noticed the enthusiasm each time it was time for that particular class. You find the kids, they're excited, they're calling on their support teachers, when are we going? You know, the excitement to learn. But we also noticed some limitations because the accent was strictly American. You know, it wasn't culturally relevant to, you know, us. And then the writing, it didn't do much for their literacy because the writing was in cursive. It went against what they learned in class. So they couldn't really learn much in terms of numeracy and literacy, but in terms of communication and social interaction, it did wonders for them. And it could also be attributed to the fact that it was only for 5 weeks. Mm. And I also have another testimony where someone reached out to me, called me and said, hey, I have a son, an autistic son who is 12 years and doesn't know how to use the potty. We don't know what to do. We're at our wit's end. And I said, can you make a video of a sibling using the potty and try to break it down in bite-sized information? Number one, oh, I'm feeling pressed. I want to go to the toilet. Number two, get to the toilet or zip your pants. Number three, pull down your pants. Number four, sit on the toilet, sit on the potty or whatever. Number five, do your business. Number six, stand up, call for help or use the toilet paper, whatever the case. Just make sure you break it down. Take your time and make the video. Let it be of a child who is almost the same age as your son, a child who he or she knows and trusts, and make sure that they speak the language the child understands in a friendly atmosphere. So it wasn't up to a week, I got a phone call and I answered the call and the person on the other end was ecstatic. She was like, ma'am, my son is now using toilets effectively. I can't believe it. It's like magic. I said, calm down. What happened? And she told me they were all together in the kitchen. After a while, they couldn't find him. They were looking for him only to find out that he's already on the toilet city, you know, taking a loo. You know, and there are countless of personal testimonies. My son learned how to read and write via video modeling. Yes, the sisters will write a video and then play it to him over and over again. You know, I'm not a neurologist, but I believe that the way their brain functions, if we understand how their brain functions, then we can teach them effectively. They can easily learn looking at you carry out a task from a mirror than looking at you directly, which is why they're able to learn looking at a video modeling rather than looking at you directly, teach them how to do that skill. My son learned how to tie up his shoelace with video modeling, how to unlock a padlock with video modeling. So I had actually proposed, you know, putting all these, you know, testimonies together, I had proposed what I call the skill boosts. Mm-hmm. So the skill boost is a video library of culturally relevant videos teaching children basic social interactions. Children from 1 to, I think it was 12, I've forgotten my concept notes, the age bracket.
Yeah.
Yes, so that they can learn how to live. Before we talk about literacy and numeracy, they have to learn how to communicate and live effectively as people and productively in future. But we're still working on funding for Skill Boost. It hasn't seen the light of day, but we're so hopeful. So that's basically our journey into the world of video modeling.
It's such an interesting concept because nowadays when so many parents, teachers have competing needs, time is one of our scarcest resources. And having a child who perhaps has a developmental condition or just needs a little bit more support in order to learn certain skills. I've never really thought of the benefit of having a simple video that the child can then refer to that is not going to be dependent on a second person being there to support. Obviously, it takes a little bit of time to create that video, to think through it and plan how to structure it, how to the various steps for each action, and then to record the video, and then possibly to teach the child or the adult, because this could also be used for adult education as well, the process of how to access the videos. But what an amazingly powerful concept to be using technology that is available at relatively low cost on, if one has access to a digital device. Yeah, that sounds like a really powerful project, and I really hope that it continues to grow and thrive and come into the public space to assist parents and teachers in Nigeria. So, Dr. Chigi, as I've said, you know, there are so many ways. I believe that as a global community, we have an incredible, the people are good. I do believe people are good. People will support, they will assist where they can. And if people would like to reach out to you to find out more about yourself, your work, the Seizure Support Foundation, the scholarship program, the video modeling, if by some chance they are able to offer some financial support to help you with the work that you're doing in Nigeria, how can they contact you?
All right, Louie, we are active on social media, especially Facebook. Just King Seizure Support Foundation, to take you right to our page on Facebook. You can send us a direct message. You can also send us an email at info@seizuresupportfoundation.org. info@seizuresupportfoundation.org. We're also active on Instagram. That'll be seizure_support_foundation. So at any point, you send us a direct message, an email, we'll reply as soon as we can. We'll have a conversation, and then we'll see what we can make out of the conversation.
Super. And what I will do is I will share the links to those resources in the description that goes out with both the audio and the video of our conversation, so that people will have them to refer to there as well.
So, thank you so much.
Yeah, you and I will chat offline after the call, and we'll get those. I'll let you know. We can chat about what we'll want to share. The final question then, I suppose, has both a simple and a complicated answer. But what would you say to a parent who has a child with a recent diagnosis of a condition, a seizure condition, or a neurological condition, a disability of some kind?
Yeah.
What advice would you offer that parent as a starting point?
Okay, so there's this acronym that we use often to counsel parents each time we come across parents who are probably at their wits' end and confused and overwhelmed. It's simply ASK, A-S-K, A-S-K. A means ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
For example, what do I mean? Down here, I don't know how it's done in the West, but down here, the first question, when something bad seemingly happens, well, first question they will ask is, oh, what have I done? Oh, who have I offended? Oh, why me, right? No, those are not the right questions. So you ask the right questions by saying, what exactly is wrong with my child? How can I get a diagnosis? How can I help the child overcome limitations to become productive and to become independent? Those are the right questions. Now, when you ask the right questions, it will take you to seek answers. And you seek answers from the correct source. For example, if you have an ear infection, you will go to an eye doctor. So if you have the right questions, it will take you to the right sources where you can get answers to those questions. And then when you're done with that, K is knowledge, to know what to do. When you're equipped with the right information, you do right by your child. So I understand it can be overwhelming to get that diagnosis that your child might be impaired, your child might struggle, you know, cognitively. But we at Teachers for Foundation will believe that nothing is beyond, there is nothing that's not really that you cannot salvage, but there is nothing that is absolutely useless, including, you know, kids with diagnosis of some sort. There's something I learned from reading Napoleon Hill's book. It's actually a self-help book, but I drew a lot of inference and advice. Now, Napoleon Hill had a son called Blair Hill. Blair was born without ears. He was impaired in his hearing. But there was something in the father that it was a strong resolve that this child is going to be independent and this child is going to be productive. That is what I want to instill in every parent. And this was in those days where, like you earlier mentioned, you didn't have technology, we didn't have the kind of support. If you had kids with any form of impairment, they are like kept in the house and are not allowed to come outside. But that wasn't Napoleon Hill. And Napoleon Hill observed his son. He said he will have to find a way to communicate with this boy. So what did he do? He observed his son. Most of the time, we are neck deep in grief. We don't observe our kids. We don't know what they like. We don't know what upsets them. We're just upset because they don't behave like the regular kids. Well, they are not regular, but they have the special abilities that you can only decipher if you pay attention. So back to my story about Blair Hill. Blair bought this, I don't know what it's called, but we call it turntable in those days. It's a musical box. And he noticed from observing the son that each time a particular track came on, Blair would quickly rush and stand in front of the music box until the track is over, then he leaves. And the father noticed this and said, is it possible that this child could have an outer of hearing ability? Because if he couldn't hear, how come he is particularly drawn to this particular track?
And consistently the same track.
Napoleon followed up and noticed that if he came close to the mastoid bone is this bone just behind your earlobes. If he came close and spoke, just touching the mastoid bone, the vibrations are carried into the boy's brain and he gets to understand what you're saying. Now, Blair said, if there is even an iota of opportunity or opening to show that this child can hear, then I'm going to put this child in this child a desire to succeed. So what's my second point? Find a vehicle to communicate with your child and put inside your child the desire to succeed. We do it with our regular kids. We tell them, oh, you're going to be a doctor. Oh, you're going to be this, you're going to be that. And your child has special needs. You don't do the same. So you observe the child, find out how to communicate with the child, and then use that vehicle to transmit into that child a desire to succeed. How did it happen for Blair on the Blair Hill? So the father started telling him bedtime stories, heroic stories, telling him stories of people who did so well in life, to the point that the man said that he got to understand that he achieved his mission one night when his son insisted he was going to sell newspapers. You know about them? What are they called? Watch the films, Extra, read all about it. Yes, all these boys, little boys are selling newspapers. Because his elder brother went out to sell newspapers. He insisted he would go. But the mother was protective. Oh, they are going to cheat you. Oh, they are going to beat you up and take your money. They restricted him. But the father said one night, he woke up and found out that Blair had snuck out of the house, borrowed money from the neighbor, bought paper, sold it, came back, slept off, clutching the money in his hand, and he knew his job was done.
Mm-hmm.
So my point exactly is, when you waste your time crying over spilt milk and feeling sorry for yourself, you're wasting valuable time that you could have used to observe your child, find out how best to communicate with that child. Even if the child is autistic, there must be a window, there must be a vehicle to communicate with that child and instill in that child that desire to succeed, and leave the rest. And the child will succeed. Hopefully, our government will do the needful and get them the quality education they need and the quality healthcare that they need. And hopefully our world will be better.
And on
that would be my advice.
On that note, I think that is a wonderful story with which to end the interview today. Today, we've been chatting with Dr. Chigi Akutwama from Nigeria about her work in Nigeria advocating for children with special needs, her foundation, the Seizure Support Foundation, and the myriad projects that she is doing to make a difference to increase inclusion of children with special needs in her community. Dr. Chigi, thank you so much for joining us. The conversation today has been fantastic.
Thank you so much, Louie. It's been a great time talking with you.
Hi there, it's Lois again. I believe that books are an important tool to help normalize the topic of disability. Increasingly, we're seeing more characters with disabilities in books that are aimed at young adult and older audiences. Sadly, there are still very few books that focus on characters with disabilities for younger readers. And that's exactly what my Missy Mouse books do. Missy Mouse is an adventurous mouse who is blind and who uses her other senses to explore the world around her. The books are aimed at readers between the ages of 3 and 9 and are a fantastic way for parents to introduce the topic of inclusion and disability to younger readers. They're also a really good way of normalizing disability for parents with a child who has a disability and who wants to show them that there are characters out there in the world that are like them. The illustrations in the book are bright and bold and fun. Colleen Gomez, who is the illustrator, did a phenomenal job with the books. And the stories are also quite lighthearted and fun and engage younger readers. I've had fantastic feedback from my readers, both young and old alike. So, if you'd like to find out more, you'll find The Adventures of Missy Mouse on Amazon or through my website, loisstrachan.com. For readers with print disabilities, the books are also available on Bookshare globally. So, find out more about a young, exciting, and adventurous mouse, Missy Mouse, in the 4 books in the Illustrated Children's Book Series, The Adventures of Missy Mouse, available at Amazon or through my website, loisstrachan.com. I hope you enjoy reading about Missy Mouse.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.